Welcome to today's presentation on what you must know about male hormones. Our presenter today is Dr. Pamela Smith. Dr. Smith spent her first 20 years of practice as an emergency room physician with the Detroit Medical Center and the next 18 years as an anti-aging metabolic medicine specialist. She is a diplomat of the board of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Physicians and is internationally known speaker and author on the subject of functional and personalized medicine. She also holds a master's in public health degree, along with a master's degree in metabolic and nutritional medicine. With that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Smith to begin the content portion of today's webinar.
Perfect. Good evening, everybody. We spend a lot of time talking about female hormones, but not so much talking about male hormones. So I thought today would be fun to actually look at what you must know about male hormones. Some great references there. And Alicia Stanton wrote the article in Rackle's textbook on the 2012 edition. And Dr. Stanton, I'd like to really dedicate this seminar this evening to her. She died of cancer and was really a premier doc in the area of looking at male hormonal therapy. Of course, it wouldn't be a seminar with looking at the steratogenic pathway. How I learned this is I live in Metro Detroit, and I took and Xeroxed this off, and I put it right on my dashboard. And every time I got stuck in a traffic, there I was learning another part of the steratogenic pathway. The definition of andropause, an absolute or relative insufficiency of testosterone or its metabolites in relation to the needs of that individual at that time in his life. And this is from Aging Male. When it comes to levels of testosterone, 30 to 60% of men in their 70s are hypogonadal, and half of healthy men between the ages of 50 and 70 will have a testosterone level below the lowest level seen in healthy men who are 20 to 40 years of age. So the peak age of testosterone for a male is age 25, and men, as you're about to see, make 4 to 8 milligrams of testosterone in a day. And here on this nice graph, you can see the testosterone decline in a male. According to the Massachusetts Male Aging Study, there's a 30-year fall in total testosterone in men, averaging 48%, a decline in free testosterone of 85%. There's also seasonal variations in the levels of testosterone, with peak levels found in the summer and early fall, and lower levels in the winter and early spring. So here we are. The hormones. Testosterone replacement for men is safe and it has significant benefits. There's been controlled studies and uncontrolled studies back 70 years. There's not a reported age at which hormone replacement in men over the age of 50 should not be considered. So let's spend a couple minutes talking about the functions of testosterone. Of course, it's a sex hormone, and men do have receptors all over their entire body. For example, they do have testosterone receptors in their eyes, and it helps prevent macular degeneration, glaucoma, and cataracts. But there's a lot of functions. It's involved in the making of protein and muscle formation, helps manufacture bone, improves oxygen uptake throughout the body, helps control blood sugar. It's needed for normal sperm development, and it regulates the acute HPA responses under dominance challenge. It also regulates cholesterol. It helps maintain a powerful immune system. It aids in mental concentration. It improves mood. It helps protect the brain against Alzheimer's. And it regulates the population of thromboxanthin A2 receptors. So, what are really some signs and symptoms of andropause? Fatigue, tiredness, loss of energy. Depression, lower negative mood. I just saw a minister today in my own practice that came in with depression and negative mood. And he said, do you think I need testosterone? Irritability, anger, or bad temper, anxiety or nervousness, loss of memory or concentration, loss of sex drive or libido, loss of erections or problems during sex, decreased intensity of orgasms, weight gain, even backaches, joint pains and stiffness. The patient's not as fit and they don't build muscle mass as well. They commonly feel overstressed. He may have a decrease in job performance and a decline in his physical abilities. Men do get bone loss. Cholesterol may go up. There is an increased risk of heart disease and an increased risk of insulin resistance, diabetes, and metabolic syndrome. So here are the different target organs for testosterone. So low testosterone levels, what does the literature really say about relationship to an increased risk in heart disease? This is from the European Heart Journal. Trial showed men with coronary heart disease has significantly lower total testosterone, free testosterone, and bioavailable testosterone. In fact, studies reveal low endogenous testosterone concentrations are related to mortality due to cardiovascular disease and other causes. In this study from the Journal of American College of Cardiology, it showed a possible correlation between lower testosterone levels, erectile dysfunction, and conditions associated with higher cardiovascular risk. And let's face it, if a patient has erectile dysfunction, or ED, they don't just have clogging of the arteries in the penis. They have clogging of the arteries everywhere. That includes the heart, the carotids, etc. In this study, it revealed that men with coronary heart disease who were under the age of 45 had total and free testosterone levels significantly lower than controls. Another study, serum-free testosterone levels were found to be inversely related to the IMT and plaque score. In this study, low testosterone levels were found to be associated with arteriosclerosis in men. How about diabetes and metabolic syndrome? Low testosterone levels are associated with an increased risk for the development of type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome. Lots of references. Since testosterone has been shown to lower blood sugar, the Endocrine Society now recommends measurement of testosterone in all male patients with type 2 diabetes. So they're looking at using testosterone to control blood sugar levels. In this study, low testosterone predicts mortality from cardiovascular disease. So there's an even increased risk. Here, this study showed low testosterone levels were associated with an increased risk of all-cause mortality and independent of numerous risk factors. So serum testosterone levels were inversely related to mortality due to cardiovascular disease and even cancer. Low endogenous testosterone levels associated with an increased risk of death from all causes and cardiovascular disease from the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology Metabolism. I deliberately today really chose articles that were from the very conservative medical literature. How about low testosterone and hypertension? This study showed that low total testosterone concentrations are predictive of hypertension, suggesting total testosterone as a potential biomarker for increased cardiovascular risk from the aging male. How about heart failure? In males with congestive heart failure, low serum androgens were associated with an adverse prognosis from the journal Heart. In men with chronic heart failure, anabolic hormone depletion is common. A deficiency of each anabolic hormone is an independent marker of poor prognosis. And again, from the very conservative medical journal Circulation. Huge when it comes to memory. In an animal trial, the author suggests that the development of memory loss in males is related to the loss of testosterone that occurs with age in men. Plays a very big role in brain functioning. So subclinical androgen deficiency has been suggested to increase the expression of beta amyloid peptides. In this study, age-related decline in free testosterone predicted age-related decline in visual and verbal memory. Here, low levels of bioavailable testosterone are a positive predictor of memory loss in men as they age. In a study done in Hong Kong, in men with low bioavailable testosterone, there was a strong correlation with memory loss and even Alzheimer's disease. From the Journal of Neurology, males that have a higher ratio of total testosterone to sex hormone binding globulin have lower rates of development of Alzheimer's. And in this one, patients with Alzheimer's disease have been shown to have lower ratio of total testosterone to SHBG when compared with age-matched controls. I mean, truly, we could go on and on. And another study, prospective longitudinal study, the risk of Alzheimer's disease was decreased by 26% for each 10-unit increase in free testosterone at 2, 5, and 10 years before the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease was made. Low levels of testosterone may occur prior to the actual diagnosis of Alzheimer's. From clinical endocrinology, low testosterone levels have been associated with mild memory loss that's not related to Alzheimer's disease. The studies have shown a correlation between testosterone levels and cognitive abilities, such as spatial performance and mathematical reasoning. In the study done on animals, depletion of androgens resulted in increased pathological conditions that are associated with Alzheimer's, increase in antibody levels, an increase in neuronal death, and hyperphosphorylation. Another animal study, both testosterone and dihydrotestosterone have an effect on the upregulation of the hippocampal neurogenesis in adult male rats. So higher levels of free concentrations of testosterone have been associated with better performance in specific aspects of memory and cognitive function. Furthermore, optimal processing capacity was found in men between the ages of 35 and 90, even after adjustment for age, education, and cardiovascular morbidity. The same was not true of total testosterone. So you really want to know the bioavailable, the free amount. How much is available for the patient to actually use? And men that have undergone hormonal treatment for prostate cancer with suppression of endogenous testosterone synthesis and a blockade of the androgen receptor, studies have shown that there is a beneficial effect on verbal memory, but an adverse effect on spatial performance. Likewise, another study on males receiving treatment for prostate cancer, these patients had visuomotor slowing and slowed reaction times in several attentional domains. In some patients, plasma amyloid levels elevated as testosterone levels declined. In this study, when treatment for prostate cancer was discontinued, memory improved, but the visuospatial abilities did not. So I think we've made a good argument here of what are the signs and symptoms of males that have declining or absent testosterone. I think we've made a good argument about really what are the functions of testosterone and how it can help prevent and even help with patients who have disease. So why would we not want to look at testosterone and other hormones in males? Well, we would. So let's look at replacement of male hormones. We do want to look at pregnenolone, DHEA, estrone, estradiol, dihydrotestosterone, and testosterone itself. So you do want to order studies. I really do like doing salivary hormones. And the reason that I like doing salivary is several fold. Number one, there are 6 medical trials showing that to look at cortisol, not for Addison's or Cushing, but to look at cortisol for hormonal balance, again, 6 medical trials that salivary testing is the way to go. So that's pretty much undisputable. I really like looking at testosterone and DHEA and estrogens with saliva because then you really get the amount of free hormone, how much is available for the body to use. I also like looking at saliva because I much more commonly, as I'm going to show you today, use testosterone transdermally. So we put it on the skin. And studies have shown that if you will put hormones on the skin, they do not show up in the serum. So serum testing would not be valid. But we do want to look at complete blood count, sex hormone binding, globulin, PSA, albumin, etc. And of course, if that they have not had cholesterol, etc. done, then we need to look at that too. And then a digital rectal exam should be performed every 6 months if the patient is on testosterone replacement therapy. If you're looking at the PSA of less than 4, but it rises by 1.5 in 1 year or 0.75 per year over 2 years, this means it needs further evaluation. A PSA of greater than 4 absolutely needs further evaluation. There's many ways you can deal with this. If my patient's already on hormones, the PSA is above 4 or it's doubled, I actually take them off of hormones. Not everybody does that. For those of you out there today who know me well, you know I will always give you the most conservative answer. So I do take my patient off of hormones, awaiting what happens with the evaluation of a PSA. Before I do that, I usually repeat the PSA to make sure it's not lab error and get a free PSA as well. But estrogens are very important in males. Men do make 3 estrogens, estrone, estradiol, and estriol. So right now, we more commonly measure estrone and estradiol. Estriol is considered experimental. I do measure estriol in males with MS. Studies in neurology over the last 14 years have shown that estriol is an effective treatment for MS for both men and women. Males need a small amount of estrogen to maintain bone structure and to help with memory. Remember, androgens aromatize into estrogens via the enzyme aromatase. So if aromatase is elevated, what lowers it? Chrysin, zinc, flaxseed, EGCG, and anastrozole. When I first started doing this kind of medicine 25 years ago, I used much more anastrozole than I do now. In fact, I really, thinking about it today, I don't have any patients right now on anastrozole. If my patients have abnormal levels of estrogens, then I just use chrysin. I can mix it in the same syringe as my testosterone. I can even put progesterone in that same syringe. If I'm going to give testosterone IM, or with the new testosterone that just came out, sub-Q, you can still compound chrysin and use it transdermally. Can you give it PO? You can, but why not use it as a cream? Less side effects, lower dose. What increases aromatase? Inflammation, obesity, high insulin levels, excessive alcohol intake, mold and biotoxin illness, and chronic inflammatory response syndrome. So this is actually a lot of my patients. So what does the medical literature say? Estradiol has a protective effect on the brain structures in older males. In these studies, serum estradiol and testosterone levels have been shown to be lower in men with Alzheimer's disease compared with age-matched controls. So when you look at estrogen levels in males, medications can lower estrogen levels and cause them to be too low. So I put the most commonly used medicines that can lower estrogen on the slide. You can see phenobarbital, for example, is one of those. And then here's a study, estriol in males for MS. And this one's from the Journal of Neuroimmunology. So estrogen levels may elevate as men age. And this is due to an increase in aromatase activity. This can be due to an alteration in liver function. This can be due to zinc deficiency, obesity, overuse of alcohol, ingestion of estrogen-containing foods or environmental estrogens, and high doses of testosterone. So I actually have a list of estrogen-containing foods and foods that lower estrogens in males. So if you want a copy of those lists, then please contact ZRT and we will make sure that those lists are available for you. Other things that raise estrogen: environmental estrogens, endocrine disruptors, and plastics, and, as we said, medication. Elevated levels of estrogen in males are associated with gynecomastia, a decrease in sex drive, and erectile dysfunction. There's a doubling in the risk of stroke. There's a higher rate of heart attack, peripheral artery disease, and coronary arteriosclerosis. So you have to measure estrone and estradiol. There's an increase in insulin resistance associated with it, rheumatoid arthritis, BPH, and of course, prostate cancer. This study showed that high estradiol levels in males was associated with an increased risk of stroke, neurology. High estradiol levels in men were associated with an increased risk in myocardial infarction. High estrone and low testosterone levels were associated with promoting the development of atherogenic lymph milieu in men with coronary artery disease, again from aging male. Low testosterone and elevated estradiol was associated in this study with lower extremity peripheral artery disease in older men. And men with myocardial infarction had high estradiol and low testosterone. Elevated levels of estradiol in men were associated with an increased incidence of strokes, peripheral vascular disease, and carotid artery sclerosis compared to subjects with lower estradiol. So you're kind of getting the hint here. You really do need to measure estrogen, and if it's elevated, we need to lower it. Elevated levels of estrogen in men are associated with an increased risk of heart disease. So what are other ways to lower estrogen? Decrease the dose of testosterone. If you've overdosed the patient, then it doesn't stay testosterone. It goes into E1, E2, dihydrotestosterone. Other ways to lower high estrogen levels, zinc, we mentioned chrysin and anastrozole and other aromatase inhibitors, grape seed extract, wild nettle root, decreased intake of estrogen-containing foods, and eating foods that decrease estrogen. Again, any handouts, then just contact ZRT because I'll be giving them a copy. Nuca, decreased alcohol intake, losing weight will lower estrogen. Remember, estrogen is stored in fat cells. Eating organic food and avoiding environmental estrogens. High dose vitamin C also increases testosterone production, by the way. Vitamin K, niacin. So important to look at estrogens. It's equally important to look at dihydrotestosterone. This is the most potent naturally occurring androgen. It's 3 times more potent than testosterone. And synthesized from the conversion of testosterone through 5-alpha reductase, as responsible for the formation of male sex-specific characteristics and the development of male genitalia and prostate. Low levels of DHT can affect sexual function and libido and even muscle tone. Elevated levels increase risk of hirsutism, male pattern baldness, and BPH. There was a recent trial also that came out showing if DHT is elevated, an increase in heart disease. DHT has growth-promoting effect on prostate cells that's greater than that of testosterone, 2 to 10 times greater. And higher DHT levels stimulate the androgen receptors to produce greater amounts of PSA. So DHT interacts with extracellular tissues to elevate prostate cancer cell mobility. High DHT has been shown to enhance earlier arteriosclerosis. Progesterone is used transdermally to lower DHT without any side effects. So this is hands down my simplest way of doing it. Progesterone is also important in males for nerve endings. It's important for memory. So this is a nice way here to just, again, mix it in the same syringe or pump. So are there actual studies on testosterone replacement? There are. Testosterone replacement improves cognitive function. It prevents the production of beta amyloid precursor protein in men. Testosterone therapy in elderly men showed some reversal of cognitive dysfunction. And testosterone therapy in this study has been shown to help with mild cognitive impairment. And I absolutely see this in my practice. It's totally amazing, the transformation that men undergo when they start testosterone. In animal studies, testosterone replacement can improve memory, possibly by reducing amyloid beta peptide production. Testosterone therapy in older hypogonadal males improves spatial cognition and verbal fluency. In older men without dementia, testosterone replacement reduced working memory errors. In this study from neurology, testosterone improved verbal and spatial memory and constructional abilities in non-hypogonadal men with mild memory loss and early Alzheimer's. And I love this from Circulation, and look at the date on this. This is from 1999. Short-term administration of testosterone induces a beneficial effect on exercise-induced myocardial ischemia in men with coronary artery disease. This effect may be related to a direct coronary relaxing effect. Wow, that's a quotation. From geriatrics, the study revealed that testosterone replacement was associated with a decrease in HDL-C and lipoprotein A. Still looking at the heart, the mechanism of testosterone replacement decreasing lipids may be due to testosterone's positive effects on abdominal fat and insulin resistance. Again, from circulation, short-term administration of testosterone induces a beneficial effect on exercise-induced myocardial ischemia in men with coronary heart disease. Here, short-term intracoronary administration of testosterone at physiological concentrations induces coronary artery dilatation and an increase in coronary blood flow in men with established coronary heart disease. In this study, again from circulation, low-dose supplementation with testosterone. Now you see here, low-dose supplementation with testosterone in men with chronic stable angina reduced exercise-induced myocardial ischemia. Testosterone replacement has been shown to increase blood flow in patients with coronary heart disease. This is one reason why I prefer transdermal. In this study, transdermal testosterone replacement has been shown to improve chronic stable angina by increasing the angina-free exercise tolerance versus controls that were getting placebo. This study, testosterone replacement reduced exercise-induced myocardial ischemia. Here, it's a coronary vasodilator because it functions as a calcium antagonistic agent. Testosterone replacement therapy in hypogonadism moderates metabolic components associated with cardiovascular disease. And in this study, it decreased inflammation and lowered total cholesterol. I mean, is there really any chronic disease that's not inflammatory in nature? It's wonderful that testosterone decreases inflammation. Testosterone replacement in patients with congestive heart failure has been shown to improve exercise capacity, improve insulin resistance, and improve muscular performance. Quote from Mayo Clinic proceedings, there is no clinical evidence that the risk of either prostate cancer or BPH increases with transdermal testosterone replacement. Again, another reason why I prefer transdermal replacement. Interestingly, men that are older with the highest risk of prostate cancer have the lowest levels of testosterone. So think about that. It's huge with insulin resistance and diabetes. In fact, testosterone decreases insulin resistance. But remember, supraphysiological doses of testosterone increases insulin resistance. It actually drives up insulin, and you get hyperinsulinemia. So you don't want to give too much. You really do want it to be the absolute perfect amount. So when I see a patient, I see them, decide on what to order. I bring them back in 3 to 4 weeks when their blood work and saliva tests are done. I go over the results. I start them on hormones. I see them back in 90 days and every 6 months thereafter. Testosterone is a controlled substance now in many states, as it is in Michigan where I practice. So you absolutely by law have to see them at least every 6 months. So here we go with testosterone replacement. I really do like transdermal. I love using a compounding pharmacy because you can get the perfect amount for the patient. That's what I love about a functional medicine, anti-aging, personalized metabolic approach. Also, compounding is less expensive commonly than commercial forms. This is the last reason I love testosterone transdermally in this medical trial from the Journal of Urology. Testosterone and ED. If a testosterone is given transdermally, it helps 81% of the time. That's given orally 51% of the time, IM 53% of the time. So if you really want to help with ED, it should be transdermal. So there are transdermal patches, there's transdermal gels, and I went through here, and at your perusal, feel free to look at all of this and looking at the possible side effects, et cetera. But part of this is related to dosing. Look at the dose here on this testosterone gel, 5 grams, which is 50 milligrams of testosterone. That's the maximum I would ever give anybody. It says it can be increased. But if you increase it, Remember, it converts into the other hormones. The patients can get polycythemia, etc. The number one reason for polycythemia in males on hormones is overdosage of testosterone. It can be given buccally, but it does have a bitter taste. People can get toothaches and anxiety. By the way, if you give it transbuccally, you cannot do saliva testing, so certainly not your best approach. There are IM injections, and I did put here some of the things that can occur with adverse effects. And you can use testosterone undecanate, possible adverse effects. And here, increased PSA and prostate size in the elderly. Of course, you can compound sterile testosterone injections. So then you can make it whatever you want. You can mix different kinds of testosterone, some that are longer acting, some that are not. You can compound testosterone with zinc. You can put in anastrozole. I mean, there's a number of things that you can do when you compound. Testosterone should not be given sub-Q, except for the new one that just came out 2 weeks ago. The rest are prescribed IM. Otherwise, a patient can develop an abscess at the site. And I do see this happening all the time. People just go ahead and give the IM ones that are designed that way, sub-Q. So this is adapted from a journal article looking at testosterone options, common dosages, advantages, and disadvantages. And there's your references that it was put together from. Testosterone can come in a topical solution. It is flammable, by the way, until dry. And then, of course, compounded testosterone cream or a gel. I particularly like this form, particularly now with a new base designed for testosterone. It's called Atrevis, A-T-R-E-V-I-S. I love Atrevis. I haven't used it in women yet with testosterone, but I use it in a lot of my male patients, and it really does help with the absorption of the testosterone. Generally given as a cream or a gel in 5 to 50 milligrams. You can, again, put Crisin in the same syringe. Crisin does have a natural yellow color. It doesn't stain the skin, by the way. And you can put progesterone in the same syringe. Who should you not give testosterone to? Males with active prostate cancer, breast cancer, prolactinoma. Prostate nodules or indurations that have not been further evaluated. Unexplained PSA increase. Severe BPH, and people with untreated sleep apnea. So if they have untreated sleep apnea, I send them to the neurologist for evaluation of the sleep apnea. Then we come back and look at testosterone use. In younger males with low testosterone, clomiphene citrate and HCG are used so that they can maintain fertility. So how can you stimulate the production of testosterone? People always ask me, are there herbal therapies? If there are, do they really work? So Dr. Sahar Swadan helped me put this together, so I'd like to credit Sahar. She's a PharmD. So these are natural therapies to increase testosterone and suppress estrogen. So even cruciferous vegetables can be somewhat helpful. And you can look at carnitine. I do want to point out that with carnitine, you should get TMAO levels before supplementing with carnitine. If you give carnitine to people with high TMAO, it increases their risk of heart disease. So I no longer give carnitine without measuring. But again, you can give Crisin to increase testosterone and suppress estrogen. It's very important to look at that blood count. Having erythrocytosis is associated with an increased risk in development of heart disease and thrombosis. In this major study on the risk and benefits of testosterone replacement, it suggested that a baseline hematocrit should be checked at 3 and 6 months and every 6 to 12 months thereafter. The hematocrit is more than 54%, and testosterone therapy should be stopped and the hematocrit is a safe level. Not everybody does that. Some people decrease the dose. I don't. And I'd like to suggest to you that you don't, particularly with this study that has come out. Just stop the testosterone. It does stay in the body a while. Have him donate a unit of blood. Go back and look at the blood count and see where you stand. And now we're going to go over a couple of cases. So case number one, and these are my own patients. This is a 63, four-year-old male. The chief complaint but he falls asleep after dinner. He's seen another physician for hormone replacement and is now seeing you for a second opinion. Past history was unremarkable. Family history, father has Parkinson's disease. He is still alive, believe it or not. His mother died in a car accident at the age of 30. Social history, he is an auto worker. He came to me on testosterone 17 milligram cream, DHEA 20 milligrams, sustained release, now known as E4M, plus pregnenolone 50 milligrams E4M. Review of systems, he didn't have any complaints. He just wanted to know, do I need to keep falling asleep after dinner? Why am I tired? What can I do? His physical examination was non-contributory, except for he did appear older than 64 years of age, which, by the way, I'm 64. I'll be 65 in July. 64 is very young. So here's his actual saliva test. Okay. Remember, he's already on testosterone when he came to me. And you can see that his E1 and E2 are in range. His progesterone is too, but his testosterone is out of range. So the first thing is, this was a compounded topical testosterone. So you want to make sure that he actually rubbed it in. He does need to rub it in for 2 minutes. And it should go on the inner thigh or top of foot. In other words, someplace with no hair. It shouldn't go on the arm because testosterone and other hormones that are applied transdermally can be transferred to others and even cats and dogs for 12 hours. So we did bump up his dose. His DHEA was not optimal. Yes, it's in range, but we want a dead center of normal. So we did increase his DHEA. His cortisol, as you can see, it spiked in the evening. This is due to some stress at home. So what are we going to do with this patient? He went home on 25 milligrams of testosterone in a Trevis base. We increased his DHEA to 30 milligrams and we made it a prescription. He was on OTC. His pregnenolone was done by serum and his level was perfect. So we continued him on 50 milligrams. For his abnormal cortisol, you go back here. He's on medication, but you don't see any nutrients. So we put him on a multivitamin. The adrenals need a multivitamin. We also put him on things for his abnormal cortisol. In this case, adaptogenic herbs. So I gave him some ashwagandha, ginseng, and rhodiola. On his next visit, we're going to repeat this in 90 days. And then I want to go back and look a little bit more at his nutritional status. At 50, people get depleting Q10, lipoic acid, and sometimes carnitine. So you want to measure those levels as well. So that's what we did with that patient. And patient number two, this was a 65-year-old male with a chief complaint of anxiety. Past history significant for hypertension and hypercholesterolemia. He's retired. His wife died 1 year of gold cancer. Remember, grieving is a 2-year process. He's very active at his local hospital, volunteering at the information desk. His father died at the age of 66, or this patient's 65, so that may be part of his anxiety, from an acute MI. His mother died at the age of 89 of old age. His sister is still alive and she has lupus. He is currently on an ACE inhibitor and a statin drug. So, ACE inhibitors deplete the body of nutrients. Statin drugs deplete the body of nutrients. So you want to go back and replenish those nutritional depletions. Review of systems, he does not have much energy as when he was younger. So again, part of the reason for this is lack of nutrients, and perhaps part of this is hormonal. His physical examination was normal. So let's see what happens with his hormones. Again, this is his actual test. So when we looked at him, his current status, his estrogen levels were normal. His progesterone level was low. His testosterone level was there, but suboptimal. His DHEA was suboptimal. And cortisol was not as bad as I thought it was going to be, with grieving being a 2-year process. So what are we going to do? He has some anxiety. Would he benefit from a little bit of progesterone? Yes. Would he benefit from a bump up in testosterone? Or giving him testosterone? Yes. DHEA? Yes. So remember, he's not on any hormones at this time. So we did give him testosterone. He's on 210. Okay, he has started exercising, and that's the reason why he got a bump up in his testosterone, was from exercise. Now we're going to give him testosterone as a cream. And again, start low, go slow. So we gave him 15 milligram cream in a Trevis base. We added progesterone of 5 milligrams to that because his progesterone level was low. We did start him on DHEA. Men are less sensitive to DHEA than women are. And so we started him on 7.5 milligrams POQAM. Could you have given 10 milligrams? You could have. Somewhere in that neighborhood. And then we need to do something for his abnormal cortisol. Multivitamin. I did give him calming herbs, lemon balm, chamomile, because he was anxious. And I also gave him rhodiola, 200 milligrams BID. I did not give him ginseng, because for some patients, it causes anxiety. So I just used rhodiola by itself in this patient. And then again, we'll look further at his nutritional status. So that's what we did. So in conclusion, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, cortisol, all the hormones we've talked about tonight, they're all important. It is a hormonal symphony. The conductor of that hormonal symphony is thyroid. You do want to help your patient be hormonally balanced so they can achieve optimal health.
Thank you, everyone, for joining. And thank you so much, Dr. Payne-Smith, for leading this informative discussion today. Have a great evening, everyone.
Thank you so much. Have a great night, everybody.